Hey, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Lucas Brewer. This is Coast to Coast Sports with my partner in crime, Bryce Brown. Bryce, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing? How's everything out there in the beautiful state of California?
We're doing good, except we're on fire right now. But other than that, we're doing great.
California's on fire, and everybody in Florida is getting COVID. Took me 7 days, I think, to get my COVID test results back. So they said that they're just so backed up on cases right now, which the numbers have gone down. So, I mean, that's a step in the right direction. But, you know, for the most part, it's, you know, still wearing a mask every store you go into and being extra cautious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at least our COVID tests are getting turned around pretty quick. I got one on Friday, and then the lady called me back today saying that I was clear. So that was a good thing. So I got cleared for my surgery that I got on Wednesday. So that's going to be another fun thing to come across here in the next couple of days. But, yeah, it's great. Awesome. Well, this is our first podcast, and let's just kind of go ahead and introduce ourselves. I can go ahead and start if you want me to, Bryce. My name's Lucas. I'm obviously from California. I live in San Diego. I played baseball for 14 years, played football in high school. I now coach football at my former high school's rival, so that's always interesting when I go back to my old alma mater. I love baseball. I love hockey. I'm an avid NASCAR fan. That's kind of where I reside when it comes to sports. Yeah, I live here, going to college, junior college right now. I'm looking to transfer to a four-year next year. And, Bryce, if you want to let us know about yourself.
Yes, I'm Bryce. I was born and raised in Tennessee and lived there for pretty much my whole life. And then I decided I wanted to go to college to hopefully majoring in sports casting. Hopefully I'll be in a booth one day and be the next Al Michaels. You never know. And I now live in Orlando. I grew up playing baseball and football. I was homeschooled, so, you know, a lot more obstacles that you have to jump through whenever you want to play sports, especially middle school, high school sports. But I played Little League football, and then my dad told me after I'd broken three wrists and fractured my foot that I probably wasn't fit enough to play high school football and take a few hits and take those beatings, especially as big as I was definitely going to be an offensive lineman. So he was like, I've been in there. And he said, it's not for the faint of heart or the weak bones. So I said, all right. But cried that day. He told me I couldn't play football. And I stuck with baseball. I played two or three years of Little League. Was a dominant pitcher. I call myself, I was like the right-handed Tom Glavine of Little League baseball. I could put that ball anywhere I wanted to. But my dad, he played college football, so football's always been my go-to sport. Love sports ever since I was little. Grew up loving sports, football, baseball, basketball. Still love sports. I'm more so just a fan who talks about sports every day, and that's why I decided to major in sports casting. So here I am.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, yeah, we're hopefully to give you guys some good context, talk about our opinions in the sports world. I think we're going to, at least right now, just because it's kind of the season going on right now, but I think we're probably going to mostly focus on baseball. It's kind of where both of our avenues are more aligned in. I know a little bit more about hockey than he does. He knows a little bit more about basketball. We'll obviously be touching on other sports, but I think kind of where we'll spend a lot of our time, at least during the season, is football. Baseball, we both know a little bit about football. So, yeah. I think the first thing we want to talk about is this Tatis and Jace Tingler had some comments about Tatis after hitting that 3-0 grand slam against the Rangers on Monday. Was that Monday night? I believe it was Monday night. And then
it was either Chris Woodward, Monday or Tuesday night. I can't remember.
Yeah, and Chris Woodward then came out and had some not I wouldn't say choice words for Tatis, but wasn't very pleased with the actions that he had on that 3-0 pitch. What were just kind of your thoughts about that, Bryce?
My thoughts were you're losing 7 runs, I believe, in the 8th inning, and the bases are loaded. And if I'm not mistaken, there was no outs. I could be wrong on that, but I believe there were no outs. So putting this into perspective, you're already down 7 runs, like I said, and the bases are loaded. So if anything, it's more of a knock just against how bad your pitching staff is and your bullpen. I mean, that number one, you had the bases loaded, and then you had the Padres' best player in a 3-0 count. So you put yourself in that situation, and you should not be complaining about it. Now, I do understand where he's coming from, that Tatis had the take signal on a 3-0 count, so Tatis should not have swung. And that is more so between Tatis and his manager than it is any of Chris Woodard's business. You know, I mean, Chris Woodard should not care about if, you know, Tatis blew through a take signal. I mean, that's none of his business. So my whole take is let him play. I mean, he had a grand slam. I mean, the kid's in his, what, second season playing, and you're going to get all butthurt when 13 years ago the Rangers beat the Orioles 30-3, and they scored 16 of those runs in the eighth and ninth inning. Like, I get it. None of these players were on that team, but still, you kind of have that reputation that you blew out at another team historically, and then you get butthurt about when a guy hits a 3-0 grand slam. Like, you got – the Rangers have more problems to worry about than Tatis hitting a 3-0 grand slam, and it's shown because they've lost 7 straight since then, including that game.
Agreed. Yeah, I guess the point I'm coming from, though, too, is that, yes, Tatis missed the sign. I mean, but the kid's probably one of the hottest players in baseball right now. People are arguing that he might be bigger face than Mike Trout is, which is a pretty big face. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but that's what people are starting to say. But to go back to my point, if you kind of go back and see the track record of the Padres bullpen so far, they've blown a lot of games in the last couple days coming up. They were on a 5-game losing streak. And in a lot of those games, they were in the lead in the eighth or ninth inning, and their bullpen blew it. So really, a 7-run lead isn't that big to them at that point. So granted, I do see where they're coming from with a 3-0 pitch. It's kind of an unwritten rule. I see that. But, I mean, you got one of the most exciting players in one of the most exciting situations that any Major League Baseball player can be put in. And I mean, you're gonna throw a fastball right down the middle. You got to expect for somebody to do something with that, even if he had the take.
Well, and I think especially you look at the way the MLB is played as a whole nowadays as to 10 years ago. Sure, 10 years ago, 3-0 pitch, you're taking no matter what. I mean, you're taught in Little League, 3-0 count, you're just sitting there. Basically, you just lay the bat down on the ground and watch the pitcher throw and see if he can throw you a strike. I mean, that's how everybody grew up playing the game. But what you're seeing now in Major League Baseball is, okay, guys like Aaron Judge, Joey Gallo, 3-0 count, you know they're going to try to groove you something. So what are these big power guys doing? They're swinging for the fences because it's one of the easiest pitches to hit. And I don't see anybody complaining about big power hitters, or if a guy like Mike Trout did it, it'd be, you know, the storyline would be, oh, Mike Trout hits a home run.
Yeah.
But the storyline here is Tatis blew through a sign and hits a grand slam, and the Rangers got butthurt about it. So and if Tatis was 6'7", 260 pounds like Aaron Judge, it probably wouldn't be an issue. But he's an average-sized MLB player who's a shortstop, not a right fielder or first baseman or even third baseman who's known as power hitters, and he hit a grand slam, and he's been tearing the league up since. So, the whole 3-0 take unwritten rule thing to me is just a load of crap nowadays, because almost every team now is telling their best hitters, swing on a 3-0 pitch. Yep. We don't care.
Uh-huh. If they're going to put you in a scenario where they have to, if you're going to work the count to be in your favor, you should be able to reap the benefits of being it, putting yourself in that type of count. And especially in a day and age where contracts are based off how much you perform, a couple gimme home runs here and there is going to be the difference between $5 and $10 million when it comes to contract time.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look at a guy like Jorge Soler. I mean, a guy who was average with the Cubs, then goes to the Royals, And all of a sudden hits 44 bombs last year and is showing that he can be a consistent power hitter. And he's going to end up getting a Nelson Cruz type of DH deal for some team, or, you know, a JD Martinez right fielder deal, you know, a 4-year, $120 million contract for some team just to go in there and be a power hitter.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Completely agree. Kind of circle back on a thought that you had about the issue between Tatis and Tingler. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's some things that just kind of need to be kept in-house. I don't think that Tingler had to bring back up that he missed the sign. I think he tried to do that in good faith, trying to save face for him and the team. Just kind of like, hey, he missed the sign. Sorry, we know what we were supposed to do in that scenario. But at the same point, I think that as a player's manager, you have to go and say, hey, keep this in-house. I know you missed it. I'm proud for what you did. I'm happy for what you did. But this kind of just needs to stay in here. Hey, next time, maybe let's take this pitch. Let's make sure we get that signed. But I think that should have never left the locker room at all.
Well, there's the two schools of thought on it, because I was talking with my dad about it, and there's two schools of belief on it. There's the old school belief that, you know, you do what your superior tells you to do. 3-0 pitch, your manager tells you to take, you take. Mm-hmm. Okay? But nowadays, are people telling Mike Trout to take on any pitch? No, he's the best player in baseball. He gets up there and does whatever he does. If he draws a walk, he draws a walk. If he strikes out, he strikes out. He's Mike Trout. You know what he's capable of. And I think you're seeing that kind of treatment with players. And I think a lot of it stems from Tatis is doing this at such a young age. I mean, he's only, what, 20, 21 years old, and it's only his second season. I mean, he didn't even play a full season last year. It was, what, like 112 games maybe? And then this season's not even a full season?
Yeah.
So for him to be doing this, I think, is just shocking a lot of people. And people like the Rangers, who have a lot of seasoned veterans on their team, they're seeing this young, swaggy-looking kid come up and hit all these monster home runs and leading his team already. It's just kind of like, you know, dang. I mean, what are we doing as an organization?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. Kind of just stay parked on the Padres right now. Man, a lot of their guys that have been struggling the last couple of years for them are starting to come to life. Manny Machado got Player of the Week for this last week. That was announced today, actually. And Will Myers has been seeing the ball really well. Hosmer's been not as much power, but he's hitting the gap-to-gap very well right now. What are kind of your thoughts on the Padres right now as we're kind of coming in this second stretch of the season? Do you think they're going to be able to keep this up, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the Padres' success is going to be like any team's success nowadays, is it's strictly based off pitching. And everybody, almost every team, has a good lineup. I mean, you compare the lineups now as to 10 or 15 years ago, it's totally different. I mean, each lineup has three hitters that are dangerous. I mean, take the Padres, for example. I mean, you got a guy like Tatis, Manny Machado. You could throw Trent Grisham in the mix now, the way he's been hitting the ball. I mean, you take the Yankees. I mean, you got the big three, LeMahieu, Stanton, Torres, or Judge. I mean, the Red Sox, you got Devers, Martinez. You know, you can go on and on with every team. As to 10 years ago, you had one power hitter, a speedy leadoff guy. And so I think now it's just – team's pitching. Whoever has the best pitching going into the postseason and during the season is going to be the team to beat. I mean, you look at the Nationals last year, they had great pitching staff and a good lineup, but it was still full of good players. So the Padres' success is going to have to come from these young pitchers and how they perform, because their lineup is showing now that when they're hot, they're the best, one of the best lineups in the league. And it's going to have to come from guys like Dennelson, Lamet. You know, how can he pitch? How can their other starting pitchers pitch? Can their bullpen come in and not give up games? You know, Kirby Yates has blown a couple saves this season. So, you know, you can only outscore people to an extent. I mean, you got to be able to hold people, teams to 1, 2, 3 runs in a game. I mean, you know, there's very few series that you see. And it's mainly the Yankees and Twins where every game's 10-9 or 8-6 or 13-12. So,
I definitely think, and on that Kirby Yates thing, it's looking like he's actually going to be out for the rest of the year. They had, I think it was right shoulder or something. He had something going on, and then Pomerantz filled in for him. Now he has shoulder stiffness. But yeah, I think their pitching is going to be a huge question mark going in. I think their kind of question marks have flipped. I think coming in, everybody thought that their pitching and bullpen was going to kind of be their mainstay, but now it's kind of flip flop and their offense would be the question mark. Their pitching's now their question mark, and their offense is definitely their added bonus going into the second half of the season. With that, pitching is going to be a big thing coming up. The trade deadline's on August 31st. I know there's some pitchers' names being thrown around right now. I don't know if there's anybody that's kind of jumping out to you that looks like maybe might be on the trade market, probably will be on the trade market, where you kind of think a good spot for them to land. You got anybody there, Bryce?
I don't really think, this is just me personally, I don't think we're going to see a lot of big name trades at deadlines this season just because of the circumstances. You know, I mean, yeah. You've seen the past seasons, guys like Zach Greinke, Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander all get dealt at the deadline, ironically to the Cheatstros. but get dealt at the deadline, and I don't think you're going to see that. I mean, you saw Brandon Workman go from the Red Sox to the Phillies, and he's came in two games and hasn't looked great for the Phillies yet. So I think given the circumstances, there might not be very many trades at all.
Yeah.
But going back to starting pitchers that you could see, a couple of names that stick out to me is mainly Trevor Bauer and probably Zach Greinke. And maybe Lance Lynn for the Rangers too, but I think Trevor Bauer's interesting because he's the Reds' ace right now. Him and Sonny Gray are pitching on another level. The Reds lineup just hasn't been consistent enough to
get them over the hump.
You know, exactly. Their lineup has not been great to help their pitching get a lot of wins. And you know, you're seeing them in the middle of the pack fight with the Brewers, hoping, scrapping that they can make the playoffs. So I think looking at a team like the Reds, you could take a guy like Bauer and sell him high now get what you can for him, because you don't know. I mean, he's shown he can be inconsistent. I mean, 1 year with the Indians, he's great. Next year, he's average. So a guy like that up and down is a guy that you need to sell high. Also, a guy like Zach Greinke. I mean, the Astros have turned things around as of late. They didn't look good starting the season, slumping as expected. And now you're kind of seeing them pick the pieces back up. But with a guy like Justin Verlander out, you need Greinke as your ace. But unless you know that you can compete for a World Series, I don't see why it makes sense to keep a guy like Greinke who is older and you're paying him a lot of money. Part of that big deal. So
agreed.
He seems like an expendable piece that you could get some nice players. The team maybe like the Yankees or maybe even the Padres, who could be looking to add another pitcher for, you know, maybe a good young player just to try to compete and win a World Series. I think that'd be more likely with a team like the Reds than the Astros, just because the way the Astros have been playing, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, I think Trevor Bauer was probably my biggest name. Maybe Mike Clevenger, but he's kind of up and down, just O pitcher overall. I think Trevor Bauer, I think if the Padres are smart, if I was sitting in AJ Preller's shoes right now, I think the Reds are somebody that I'd be talking to a lot, because they got Anthony DeSclafani. I can't pronounce his name very well. But him and Bauer, they're both free agents at the end of this year, actually. Bauer's finally coming off of his rookie deal and just his arbitration years and all that good stuff. So he's finally a free agent at the end of this year. So I think the asking price is going to be interesting, because it is a shorter season. So it's like, how many prospects is Bauer worth for a 30-game sprint and a playoff run without him knowing for sure if he's going to resign? I think if you put somebody who's pitching well, like a Bauer, in the rotation for the Padres, he's pitching really well right now. I think he's 2-0 with a 0.93 ERA or something like that. Maybe he's 3-0 now. But he's throwing the ball, arguably one of the best pitchers in the NL right now. And I think Lance Lynn's also another guy that you kind of got to look at. He's throwing the ball right now. Older guy, but he did sign I think, an under $10 million contract with the Rangers last year. I think it was like a 2-year, maybe like $8 million or something like that. But he's throwing the ball great. But he's also an older guy too. So is he going to be more injury prone towards the end of the season? So there's a lot of variables coming down in these next couple of days. But yeah, I think Trevor Bauer is the biggest question mark in my opinion.
Well, going back to what you said about trading for a guy and it being only potentially 30-some-odd games, I just always go back to the Cubs and when they traded for Aroldis Chapman and gave up their top prospect, Gleyber Torres. And now, granted, it was for August, September, and October, but and even go back to the Astros. I mean, they got Verlander at the August deadline deal, the non-waivers or waivers trade deadline, whatever it is, back when they had that ridiculous crap. You know, and they had him for September, which obviously contractually he was agreed to them for more than 1 year. But I think you got to put into perspective, and I think the Cubs really made this dealing type or this dealing concept popular is, look, we just want to win a World Series now while we're good because we don't know how long, you know, what our window is. So I think for a team like the Padres, you know going forward that your team's going to be competitive for the next couple of years, but are you at that point yet that you could win a World Series now, and does it make sense to trade for a guy like Bauer? I think you take a team like the Yankees who have a lot of expendable prospects, guys like Clint Frazier who've been up playing good. You could deal him and maybe somebody else for a guy like Bauer.
Yeah.
Highly doubtful you could re-sign him, but you're getting him for 1 month and then the playoffs. So Basically 2 months. And that's what the Cubs did with Chapman. They had him for 3, gave up their top prospect to the Yankees. Chapman wins a World Series with the Cubs after spending half a season with the Yankees, then turns around and re-signs with the Yankees. So, that to me, I think that shows that teams just – they want to – when they think they can win a World Series, they go all in.
Yeah, but then it also brings up the other – is this going to be looked upon as a actual World Series run? Or is it just going to be an asterisk by it? I think there's always going to be an asterisk by it. But if like a team like the Padres wins their first World Series, will it be looked upon as a quote-unquote real World Series win because they didn't play 162?
I don't put an asterisk beside it. I get it that the season is shorter, but the teams that you expected to be good over a 162-game schedule – are still being dominant. I mean, the Marlins are a good team and may end up making the playoffs, but if they make the playoffs, nobody is expecting them to make it to the World Series or even win it. Now, crazier things have happened in baseball, don't get me wrong, but I just don't believe you could put an asterisk beside this World Series because they expanded the playoffs, so obviously more average teams are going to make it in, and teams that probably over 162 games might not would make it in. But I think at the end of the day, whether it's 60 games, 162 games, the best teams are still going to make it because look at the Marlins. Okay. Compare them to the Phillies. Well, the Phillies in the playoffs are probably going to be a lot better than the Marlins just because of experience.
Yes.
So teams like the Orioles, the Marlins who make it, they won't know what to do when they get there. So I'm not putting an asterisk beside this World Series, just same with the NBA finals, just because of the circumstances. And there's those baseball diehards that say, well, it's not 162 games. This whole season is just washed or whatever. I don't believe so because you're getting the best of teams you're getting teams' best performances over 60 games as 162. You can take a few games off. I mean, you can afford to go on a 3-game losing streak. Now it's kind of like the March Madness tournament. It's a sprint. It's not a race. You know, it's not a 5K or I'm not big into running. So, my racing terms might not be the best, but I mean, it's a sprint. It's okay. Who can run the fastest and who can finish the quickest? It's the Usain Bolt 100-meter race and not the 400-meter race. So,
I think this playoff scenario and everything. One thing I did read was that there's rumors of a possible playoff baseball bubble, similar to the bubble that's going on right now in Florida for basketball, and then up in Edmonton and Toronto for hockey. What are your kind of thoughts on if they decide to mainstream everybody down just to make sure that there's no really try to crack down on this COVID thing? What are your thoughts on that if they do that?
Well, when you look at sports and how they've handled, each sport has handled it differently. Obviously, with baseball, it affected the season. NFL, it's not really going to affect the regular season. You know, it took out the preseason aspect of it. But I think when you look at basketball, because it was mainly 2 weeks, and then that they had to, because they had to bring everybody together so quick, they did a good job of quarantining everybody, and then they had the least amount of positive tests. And I think with the MLB, the protocols that are in place are shown to be effective and have proven to be effective. It's just players and teams are not abiding by those protocols. I mean, you saw the Marlins. I mean, how it affected them. I mean, they lost a week of their season just because a few guys wanted to go out to the club in Atlanta before the regular season actually started. And then you saw the Marlins outbreak. And they had, 20-some-odd people within the organization, players, coaches, training staff that tested positive for it. You know, for not following the protocols. And then you saw with the Indians, who was it? Zach Plesac, I believe, who they sent home for the remainder of the season for going out with his friends for breaking the protocols. So. And so I think you saw the MLB as a whole come together and say, look, if we want to finish this season, follow the protocols. They are shown to be working. I mean, if you're going to get COVID, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, staying at hotels, people get it. Don't know it. It's just like the cold. It's just like the flu. You can have it, not realize it. Then the next day you wake up and you have all the symptoms. So, you know, it's a sickness. It's a virus. People are going to get it. That's perfectly normal. But how they are handling those situations has been proven to work. So as far as an MLB playoff bubble, I'm not 100% for sure if that would be necessary, just because I think basketball is a lot easier. You know, you can go play at a gym and at Disney World and play the playoffs there. Kind of hard to do that in baseball, and same with football. You can't create a bubble at one stadium just because of what you're going to do to the field. Players running around in the outfield, the dirt, you know. I mean, the time and effort and money it would take to keep those places up and to play consecutive games there is a lot harder than playing on hardwood, playing basketball on hardwood. So as a playoff bubble for the MLB, could it work? Yes. Do I think they'll implement it? I don't think so, just because I feel like the direction that they are going with the protocols are working. And now that teams are actually abiding by those protocols, that it's that I don't think a playoff bubble will be necessary, but they could still do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess my only thing is I guess you could kind of start, if you're going to do it, I think now's the time to start figuring out what you're going to do. I think you could, they're taking eight teams from the NL, eight teams from the AL. I think you can put some good money into a couple of the facilities in Arizona and Florida in the spring training. So I think you can kind of do a bubble like that. I know that a lot of the stadiums, though, in Arizona are a lot closer than the ones in Florida, so I don't know how hard that would be. But I think there's a couple ways you can get around it. I'm not too keen on it. If they're fine, just let them play where they're at. And I think it just complicates things at that point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in playing in a bubble, I mean, you're basically putting everybody together and – you know, if one player goes out and gets it, then everybody in that bubble. So there's pros and cons to the bubble. I just think with baseball, I don't really see it happening.
Yeah, I think the other kind of the point, just kind of wrap up here on talking about this, is that hockey and basketball both started in the bubble. They didn't come into a bubble, where I think that's where baseball would have the issue, is they're kind of coming out and siphoning into the bubble, whereas the other two sports just started there. So they started with the initial quarantine. Speaking about basketball and hockey, do you want to kind of just fill us in on what's going on with the basketball playoffs right now? I know that's starting to get into the thick of playoffs.
Yeah, so as of yesterday, the Celtics swept the 76ers. That is my favorite NBA team. the Boston Celtics from Tennessee. Huge Boston Celtics fan. Jason Tatum was absolutely phenomenal. Had, I believe, 15 rebounds, which was a career high in regular season and postseason. Kemba Walker was amazing. Wasn't as good the first two games, but was really good. Jaylen Brown has been good. And we saw a guy like Gordon Hayward go down, sadly, with another injury. Hopefully he'll be back. So the Celtics and Raptors are going to be matching up. The Lakers are up on the Blazers, I think 3-1 now. So they win one more game. But the biggest news was the beef between Montrezl Harrell and what he called Luka Doncic. And it was kind of like poking a bear because Luka had 42 yesterday against the Clippers and then hit a game-winning three-pointer in overtime to win buzzer beater to win 135-133, I believe, 132. I believe it was 135-133. And so now that's a 2-2 series, and with the Clippers being a 2 seed and the Mavericks being a 7 seed. And so just seeing how a guy like Luka Doncic has came into the league and basically taken it by storm is almost kind of like watching a Larry Bird, Magic Johnson type. I don't think the NBA is so different, but the difference between Luka and, say, LeBron is when LeBron came into the league, he had nothing. He was the first overall pick, never had a team in Cleveland. But then you're seeing a team like the Mavericks, who just had a down year, happen to get a high draft pick, take a guy like Luka, and then they make a trade for Kristaps Porzingis. Then you got two all-star players on the same team, and then they added a lot of pieces in there, that the Mavericks are going to be a team over the next 5 years who will be competitive and could possibly win an NBA Finals. But yeah, a guy like Luka Doncic, after what he did last night to lead his team, being 21 years old, I believe, and being this competitive at this early of an age, it is scary. It is absolutely scary for the future to come.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm not a big basketball guy, but I see all those Luka Doncic's posts and highlights, and guy's crazy. Yeah.
So what's going on how's the hockey bubble?
Hockey bubble's doing all right. We're starting, I think it's the second round of playoffs, actually. We got 8 teams left fighting it out for Lord Stanley's Cup. Right now we got the Canucks, the Knights, the Bruins, the Lightning, the Flyers, the Islanders, the Stars, and the Avalanche. The one team right now that's kind of surprising me is the Dallas Stars. They're putting up some huge points these last couple of nights to beat Calgary to move on to the next round. They scored, it was 7-3, which is a huge game. And the Flames started out way hotter than the Stars. Flames scored 3 unanswered goals, and then the Stars came back with 7 unanswered. So that was a huge game for them. And then they went out and scored 5 two nights later against the Avalanche to start that next round of the of playoffs. The Golden Knights are super hot right now. Their inaugural season, they did really well. That second season, they kind of hit their sophomore slumps. But this third year, they're back in stride, and they're looking like their first-year selves. The East is looking okay. I really think one of the West teams is going to win it. They're just playing super hot hockey. You got the Bruins and Lightning. The Bruins are looking okay. I mean, they're looking typical Bruins style. They're always going to make it to that second round of playoffs. It's just going to grind you down. Lightning's not looking like their old Lightning self. Still putting up some decent points on the board, but their games are looking a lot closer. The Flyers, I'm loving the Flyers right now. I love Corey Hart. He's having a great season, and he's the goalie for the Flyers. The Islanders were kind of surprised team two out of the East. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this next 7-game series goes. This last one was another one before was 7, but yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Kind of my favorites right now. I think the Stanley Cup's going to be either Canucks versus Flyers or Stars versus Flyers. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Corey Perry had some big blocks for the Stars. Pavelski had some big blocks, had some big goals. Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting next 2 weeks to see who gets the Stanley Cup.
I'm not a huge hockey person, but I keep up with the Nashville Predators just being from Tennessee and kind of watched them. And when they got knocked out, I just kind of lost a little bit of interest. But me being just not a hockey head, you know, it's kind of weird seeing teams like the Flyers and the Stars be mentioned in that Stanley Cup playoff or in the Stanley Cup finals category, just because you look over the last few years or 10 years, really. I mean, you've seen teams like the Penguins and the Bruins and the Blackhawks and the Capitals, you know, mainly being in that conversation for the most part. And then seeing these teams just kind of come out of nowhere is just kind of interesting to me. You know, like I said, yeah. I'm not a huge hockey person, but it's just kind of like these, you know, middle of the pack teams just having great seasons and getting hot at the right time, and not seeing those perennial hockey teams in it. It creates a lot of parity, which is good for the sport.
Yeah. And I think it was also good that they, for especially for those middle of the road teams that were just barely making the playoffs, to get that little extra needed break in the middle of the season and kind of just readjust mentally, knowing going in that you're playing playoff hockey from the start. There's no, we need to win this game to get in, we need to win that game to get in. It's playoff hockey from the first puck drop, which I think helped a lot of these middle of the road teams just kind of go in with a different mindset, which I think is really key.
Yeah, I would say that's kind of similar for basketball. I mean, everybody had the big layoff from COVID, and then it's, you know, basketball, they didn't really want to rush everybody back into it. So you saw a lot of players start playing the limited minutes, just kind of like preseason basketball almost, because they were just playing for seeding the first couple weeks. But then once all that kind of got settled in, you started seeing teams play their starters a little bit less and, you know, just resting them up for the playoffs, just, you know, getting them back in the routine of playing basketball. And in turn, we've seen great playoff basketball. I mean, last night, Donovan Mitchell led the Jazz as they now lead the Nuggets 3-1 in that series, which was not expected. He had 51. I think that's the second time this series he's had 50. And Jamal Murray also scored 50 points in a losing effort. So very rarely do you see two players score 50 points in an NBA game. But that has been great playoff basketball. Not so much in the East. The Heat are up 3-0 on the Pacers, or 2-0. Maybe 3-0. I think it's 3-0. You saw the Celtics sweep. You saw the Raptors sweep, which was as expected because the top four teams in the East were no doubtly going to win. And but the second round of the East will be great. But we've seen a great first round from the West. You gave your picks for the Stanley Cup. I'll just give mine real quick for the NBA Finals. Before the playoffs started, I said that it would be Celtics-Clippers, but after seeing how the Clippers have struggled against the Mavs, if they make it out of the series, I will say the Clippers will win. But watch out for the Lakers, because the Lakers have not looked great against the Blazers, but the last couple games they've started asserting their dominance as the number one team in the West. So definitely watch out for the Lakers and the Clippers. That'll be the two teams out of the West. The East, I think the Raptors are a sneaky team that could make their way up there. I don't see it. I don't think they'll get past my Celtics. That'll be a 6 or 7 game series. And one of those teams is going to have to play the Bucks. So West is definitely Lakers, Clippers. East, in my opinion, I think it's Lakers, Bucks.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Since we're kind of giving predictions and stuff right now, now that we're kind of hitting this middle part of the season in baseball, do we want to give our mid-season playoff predictions right now and just kind of go in and see who – I know we got an adjusted format, but just kind of as of right now, who we think is going to win, be the two teams that make it from each division and then our two wild cards?
Sure, that's fine. If you want to go first, you can do the National League first, and I'll hit you up with my National League teams.
Okay, sounds good. So in the NL East, we got the Braves, the Marlins, the Mets, and the Nationals, and the Phillies. My two teams that I think for sure are going to be in the playoffs, Atlanta, they just got a good squad right now. They're playing sound, fundamental baseball. Their pitching is another area. I think they're another one of those teams that might be in the market for a Bauer or a Lynn, somebody to bring in that's not too going to break the bank, but somebody that's a sound pitcher that can give them some quality starts. And then I've said it from the beginning since the first week, the Miami Marlins are going to make the playoffs this year. And I don't know how deep they're going to go, but I think Donnie Baseball is doing something good with that club. Right now they're sitting at 500. They are still in second place, but that's due to some COVID stuff. So it's just based off win percentage. But I think the Marlins, if they can have a decent second half, I think they're going to make it. The Mets and the Nationals and the Phillies are just not playing great baseball right now. And they got a, I think they have the hardest overall league to play in, playing the AL East as their other counterparts in the season. So that's who I got in my NL East. And then in my NL Central, I'm going to go Chicago Cubs just because they are slaughtering the NL Central right now. They're sitting at 17-10 right now. My second team there is St. Louis is sitting at 9-8 right now, but they're battling some COVID issues. I got to go with my boys, the Brewers. I think they're going to be able to pull it out the second half. With a guy like Yelich on your team, I think they just find a way to pull it together, and I think they get that second spot in the Central. My NL West, I'm going to go Dodgers, and I got to go Padres. They're both playing some hot baseball right now. I don't know how deep the Padres will go, but I think it's a good experience for them, especially in the shortened season, just kind of get their feet wet, know what the playoffs like, know what it's like to be the responsibilities of doing promos and being on social media, promoting that sort of, so to speak. It's kind of a good controlled environment. I think that'll be good. I did say earlier before the season started, I think there was a good possibility of four teams from the National West making the playoffs. I'm still sticking with that. I think that the Rockies are going to pick up and have a nice second half. I think they're going to be able to make the playoffs. And I think either Arizona or San Francisco is going to be able to pick it up. But if they don't, then I'm going to go. I think the Cardinals just squeak into the playoffs. So that's kind of who I got. That last wild card's kind of up in the air for me.
Yeah, my National League, I have the Braves winning the division. Although I do think that division will get interesting over the second half, because since it's based off winning percentage, there is just four games between the Braves and the Phillies, and that is the first and fifth place teams. So with the Braves' inconsistent pitching and the lack of pitching, if their lineup hits a slump, they can, because their lineup has been playing red hot as of late, just churning out wins, late games, walk-offs, that they've really been clutch for them. And I just don't think with that inconsistent pitching, your lineup is going to have a slump at some point. And so I think it's going to be harder for them to win the division, say, as a team like the Mets, who have a guy like DeGrom and who have decent enough other starters, that if the Mets lineup could ever just fully get going, you could see a team like them maybe jump up, or even a team like the Phillies, who've been playing decent as of late. If their pitching gets it together and their bullpen could just quit blowing games, you could see them jump up. But my picks, I'll stick with the Braves winning it, just because I feel like overall they're the best team. And then second, I like the Marlins, but I just feel like the second half they're going to be the Marlins. And I think you see the Nationals. I think you really see them put it back all together and make a second half push to really push the Braves for the title. But I think you see them make the playoffs as a number two team. The Central, you got to go the Cubs. The way they're playing, there's no doubt. It's definitely going to be the Cubs. Second, I think it's a toss-up. The Cardinals right now are sitting there second with a winning percentage, but they've played a lot less games. So I think right now they have to be the favorite. But my pick, I'm sticking with the Reds. I said the Reds will make the playoffs. I originally said they'd win the division. I don't believe they're going to do that. But I think the Reds, their lineup's going to get it all together, match with their pitching. Mm-hmm. And I think that you could see them really make a second-half push. The West, Dodgers, 22-8. Nobody's touching them. Padres, nobody's touching them. Those are the two best teams in the NL West. The wild card, it's a coin flip for me, because there's so many teams between the National League East and the National League West that you could see making it. And with the circumstances of the season, there's really no team is out of it yet. I think the only team you can for sure say is out of it is the Pirates, just because they're 7-17 and show no signs of getting better.
And the Angels. So
yes. So I think, you know, it's basically a shot in the dark picking two wild card teams. But I think my wild card team is going to be Philadelphia, just because I feel like with Girardi there, he's going to get him set up to play the right kind of baseball at the right time of the year with his experience. And then I'm going to go with an interesting team. I'm going to go with the San Francisco Giants. A lot of people high on the Rockies. Rockies started out hot, Charlie Blackmon playing great. But the San Francisco Giants are an interesting team. They're a scrappy team. They just keep finding ways to win. Solano's been playing good. Yastrzemski's been playing really good also. So I think a team like the Giants could just barely squeak in, just maybe by a half a game with that winning percentage, and see them just barely squeak into the playoffs and make it.
Yeah, that is an interesting team. They came alive as of late. Kind of switching over to the AL now. Going to start out in the East. You got Tampa Bay and the Yankees. They're playing solid baseball right now. I think the Yankees are going to come back and be able to take that division away from the Rays. Again, because of this whole COVID win percentage thing, Tampa Bay is technically in first, but they've played more games than the Yankees, so it's a whole math equation that somebody smarter than me figures out. But I think the Yankees will get that top spot, and Tampa Bay will be in second. The Central, I mean, Minnesota, they just hit the ball out of the ballpark. That's all they can do. Their pitching is decent, but they can hit the ball a country mile, and that's going to win you games. And then the second spot, it gets really interesting because you got the Chicago White Sox, who I was never a huge believer in them, but they've put together a decent first half. Same with the Indians. Detroit, I mean, they're technically nobody's out of it yet. It just kind of depends on how Cleveland and the White Sox do in the second half. But I think the number two spot's definitely going to go to Cleveland. I think they got more guys that have just been there. I think the White Sox are still meshing together as a team. They got a lot of new additions this last year. But my favorite's still Cleveland. And then going out to the West, Astros just having a great season at 20-9 right now. I see them Athletics. Just staying hot. Wait, who did I say?
You said the Chichros, the Astros.
Oh, sorry. Athletics. Sorry, Athletics. Athletics are 20-9, and I see them just staying hot. They got Chris Davis out there. They got Matt Chapman, who's sneakily becoming one of my favorite players. He just plays the game right, keeps his head down. He's a West Coast guy, so he doesn't get the recognition like a Tatis or somebody like that they deserve. And then my second place team, man, I really hope this happens. It just depends on how the trade deadline goes. I really hope my Rangers can turn it around and get up there and knock Houston out of the playoffs. I do not want to see the Astros in the playoffs this season. The smart person in me says the Astros are going to steal second spot away from them, but I'm just praying deep down in my soul that the Rangers can figure it out offensively, and get this boat going in the right direction. My two wildcard teams, I never thought in a million years I'd say this, but the Baltimore Orioles are going to be definitely in this playoff run, and I'm going to go Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you for the most part. That second American League wildcard spot is definitely going to be interesting because the I feel like the American League East is definitely Rays Yankees. Flip flop between those two. I'm a diehard mm-hmm. Yankees fan, and so you know if there was a third league, you got the AL, the NL. If there was an IL league, the Yankees would be running that 1,000,000-1. Just because it's crazy. I mean, how many players continuously get hurt? You know, starting off the season, it was LeMahieu and Chapman were on the COVID list. Luis Severino was done. And then you see guys like LeMahieu, Torres, Judge, Stanton just get hurt. And it's very, 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 very frustrating. But also it's kind of good to see guys like Gio Urshela really step up and a guy like Clint Frazier come up and play really good. However, being a diehard Yankees fan, I just – don't think the Yankees win the division, and it pains me saying that, but I think the Rays, with their pitching and how scrappy their lineup is, I think the Rays take the division. Yankees get the second spot. The Central, Twins are going to win it, although the White Sox will win the AL Central. The White Sox will win really? The AL Central. The Twins will get the second spot. The White Sox have a young energy that remind me a lot of that 2018, 2019 Braves team. That just, you have some great players, especially young players there. They just have that energy. I think they really win that division. Two, I think, is the Twins. The AL West, the Athletics are going to win the division easily. We got the second best record in baseball. The shortstop, Marcus Simeon, Chapman, Olson, just Chris Davis. I mean, guys like that, they just, Ramon Laureano, they have a good squad and pretty good pitching. Sadly,
their pitching's super low key, though.
It is. I mean, you never, I mean, and it's a team that, you know, ask anybody, okay, name five of the Oakland Athletics starting pitchers, and you just sit there with a, I don't. I mean,
truthfully, you might know, I don't even think I can Jesus name one.
Lizardo. I just know, just from playing MLB The Show, that they have Jesus Lizardo, who's regarded as one of their top prospects. Other than that, I couldn't name one pitcher.
yeah.
Well, they do have one guy I know. I just can't think of his name. Go figure. But I think the Astros win. I think the Astros end up being second. The wild card, it gets interesting, but I think the Indians definitely take that wild card spot. The second AL wild card spot will be interesting, because I think you look at how close a team like the Tigers are competing mm-hmm. with the Blue Jays and the Orioles and even the Rangers. I think you can see any of those four teams squeak in the playoffs, but I think those are four bad teams. I don't think the Blue Jays are a bad team or the Orioles, but the Tigers or the Rangers making the playoff honestly scares me, because whoever they play against is absolutely going to rail them.
Yeah.
But the Orioles are an interesting team. They've definitely surprised me. Guys like Anthony Santander, the way he's been playing this year, the White Smith. I mean, they got some good guys there. That definitely an interesting team. I don't know if they have enough to make the playoffs, but I'm on a roll with them making that second wild card spot. But it's gonna be funky, because right now it's shaping up to be the Orioles or the Blue Jays, but mm-hmm. anything could happen with that spot.
Yeah, I think it's going to be who can get off to the best second half start. I know we don't have an all-star break or anything like that, but who can ever come back and say, okay, the first half of the season is done now. That was great. Learn from what we did. But who can ever look at this as like the second season, like right now we got 30 games to make or break us. So I think you can ever kind of differentiate, kind of take that mentally and kind of just figure it out from there. I think is going to be who makes the playoffs out of those last four teams.
Yeah, I mean, just taking a team like the Orioles, for example, looking at their schedule in September, I think they have a two-game series against the Mets, maybe a three-game that has the last day of August runs in. You got the Yankees twice, the Mets again, the Braves, the Rays. So, I mean, like you said earlier, the two best divisions of baseball are beating up on each other, the NL East and the AL East right now. So it's definitely hurting them and helping other divisions, but I also think come playoff time, those teams out of those divisions will be more ready, because it's like they've been playing playoff baseball this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, this is another thing that I'm not a huge fan of, is that it's really hard to get a nice feel of how you're actually playing, because when you're playing the same teams consistently for 60 games, it's really hard for you to kind of know where you're at in your whole just division in general, when you're not playing a Cincinnati or a St. Louis or a Chicago or even just a New York Mets, just to kind of know where you're actually at in your whole division, just because you're not getting that other type of competition. You're only getting the same people. So that's kind of one of my downfalls of the season so far.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that for the most part. I mean, you know, everybody wants to see the Yankees play the Dodgers. And I believe the Yankees were actually lined up to play the NL East this season anyways. So it all just kind of worked itself out. Obviously you're not seeing, you know, the Yankees play the Indians or the Twins during the regular season. But as far as interleague matchups, you know, you're not seeing – I mean, you're seeing the typical as you would for this year. Because I know me and Aston, I believe we talked about going to maybe potentially Atlanta to watch the Braves-Yankees series if it was possible. That's a fair point. I mean, you're not seeing – I mean, even teams in the same league play each other. I mean, you're not seeing the Dodgers play the Braves or the Phillies, and you're not getting those matchups. So come playoff time, I mean, you faced these guys in the past, but you haven't faced them this year. Season. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah. It's going to make for very interesting playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, because is that first two games, I mean, you hate to say it, but are they kind of a feeling out process? Because it's kind of like, we haven't faced you at all, you haven't faced us at all, so it's kind of like, we kind of want to hold our cards close to us, you want to hold your cards, so it'll be interesting to see how those first two games are, just kind of from a managerial standpoint and what they'll do, but also just in the terms of the quality of play because they haven't played each other.
Sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're almost about to an hour right now. So if you want to, you think it's about time to wrap this first podcast up there, Bryce?
Hey, I'd say that'll work. Hopefully next podcast we can talk some more football or get into football more. One last quick topic I did want to get into was the whole Earl Thomas situation, and we can take a minute or two talking about this. I know my personal opinion is, anyways, just for everybody, Earl Thomas, he was signed a 4-year deal with the Ravens in 2019 and was on the Ravens team last year, left Seattle, signed with Baltimore, and then he spent all last season with the Ravens. And then after a little offseason issue and then getting into an altercation where supposedly he threw punches at teammate Chuck Clark in practice over the weekend, the Ravens decided that it was time to move on and he wasn't branding well with their culture. So then they came out and said that they were going to either trade or release him. And then a couple hours later, they ended up releasing him. And in that, they're still going to have to pay him $10 million. So Earl Thomas is currently a free agent and has the potential to or can sign with any team possible. So the biggest name out there is the Dallas Cowboys, which is who he said he wanted to play for if he ever were to leave Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I think there's a couple good places that he could fit. I think the Cowboys are more than likely just going to sign him. I think he's kind of had a hard off season so far, just with everything that's gone on. I think it would be poetic justice if he did sign with your Tennessee Titans, though, become the fullback and a lead block for Mr. Henry. I think that he'll end up signing with the Cowboys. I think another spot that people might like to see him is out there with the Rams in LA, coming into that new stadium. But I think more than likely, I think for somebody that wants to go play somewhere, I think a team like that's just going to get it done, and hopefully they get the good Earl Thomas from Seahawk days.
Yeah, just a couple other teams, I think. And the team that is just interesting to me is the San Francisco 49ers. They need safety help in the worst way. They also have Richard Sherman, so you can kind of recreate the whole Legion of Boom, minus Cam Chancellor. But, you know, that would be an interesting team. I don't know where they are cap space-wise. I know the Cowboys did release Gerald McCoy last week. That saved them some money and restructured Tyron Smith. So that freed up some more money for them to go out and get Earl Thomas. Another very interesting team, and this will be brief, is the Miami Dolphins. I think you look at the signing Byron Jones, Kyle Van Noy, how they've rebuilt this defense. You add Earl Thomas to that secondary where you already have Byron Jones, Xavier Howard, and you drafted Noah Igbinoghene out of Auburn. That is a scary secondary to me, and I think that would be a phenomenal defense to what they already have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hate it for Earl Thomas. I feel like he's going to get the Antonio Brown treatment when he doesn't necessarily deserve it. I think the whole Antonio Brown saga was just – it was psychotic, and the whole Earl Thomas thing is just kind of – the Ravens just getting out of it, maybe just because he didn't fit their culture. Mm-hmm. But he's going to get blamed the bad guy. And at the end of the day, he was the one who was trying to throw punches at practice. But you know, I mean, he's still one of the best safeties in the league. So there's definitely going to be a team out there to sign him.
Agreed. Definitely agreed. Awesome. I think that'll do it for our first podcast, and we will see you guys next week on the Coast to Coast podcast. Thank you.